Welcome to Disruptive Branding by Saffron Brand Consultants. In this podcast, we will share the most important insights that we have gathered from several decades of working closely with some of the world's most disruptive brands. We will show how every business, startup to enterprise, can design its brand using disruptive thought and action. From how-to sessions with members of our executive team to conversations with our clients, learn firsthand how to position your brand to compete with disruptive challenges and to challenge and disrupt yourself.
Welcome to a special edition of our podcast on branded environments. Today we welcome two impressive guests. Elvira Muñoz, she's the director of the Master in Strategic Interior Design at Yale University, and Jacob Ben-Bunan, CEO and co-founder of Saffron Brand Consultants. Welcome. How are you guys doing today?
We're fine. Very happy to be here.
Absolutely. A bit hot in Madrid, but we'll survive, I guess.
My first question goes to Elvira. After so many years of experience in the industry, I would like you to tell us in your own words, what is a strategic interior design really means to you today? And has this been changing throughout the years?
Okay. A strategic interior designer is a designer that not only solves aesthetical and functional problems, but also takes into account a wider picture. So like a good photographer, like Sebastián Salgado, he looks beyond. You have to take account of the challenges of the company, the behavior of the employees or the people who are going to use it, the user experience, also the carbon footprint and the impact in the environment, and more than anything, the well-being and people-centric design. So you have to look at many things, not just aesthetics and not only functionality, also money, of course, money. But a lot of issues that you have to take into account. And technology, of course, as the enabler of the digital interaction. I really found out that I belonged to a company when I walked inside DEGW, the company that I then was a partner of. And I found out that they did fact-based design. That's where it all started. DGW was the first company that did strategic interior design. They said research, strategy, design. So don't start designing before you haven't done your research and understood fully the company's needs and challenges and disruptions, what they're trying to achieve. Then establish a strategy with them. And then you start designing. So those were the three key steps that I learned. And I really thought, wow, now I've discovered something. And I've been doing a lot of, coaching and teaching since 1998, which is when I joined DGW until now. Now, most of the companies acknowledge the importance of the environment. And now after COVID, everyone has been indoors for 95% of their time. And they, I think most of the people have missed their office or their hotel or their trips. So space, and we now know that we look forward to more intense experiences, and the appropriate space is going to deliver that. So that is a key trait of a strategic designer.
Makes total sense. And I think it's even more interesting because now we have seen throughout the past years, we have seen human behavior changing so much, pushing companies to develop and use new technologies, as you were saying, new strategies, all of this to adapt these fast-changing changes that have been happening. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit more about your concept of the new tomorrow and tell us a little bit why is it so relevant today in this new life and this new world that we get to live in?
Well, the new tomorrow, define tomorrow. Let's put ourselves in 2030. I think by 2030, I think even now, the world has enough constructions and infrastructures. I don't think we need to build too many more things. We need to refurbish what exists. So the new tomorrow is about optimizing what we have already built. And this transformation has to be done from the inside out, from what people need and what are the experiences they're searching for. And we have to provide them. You have to think that very soon our cities will be complete, they will need to be reshaped because all of the lower ground floor areas are going to be empty. Most of the shopping malls are empty. Most of the retail banking offices are closing. All the small businesses are closing because of the online shopping. So we will need to redesign everything. That's the new tomorrow, redesigning everything, hopefully more strategically and not just money-driven operations.
But there is always different people who think or have different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So we have the artist Piet Mondrian itself, who believed that abstraction matter way more than utilitarian value. So how do you always ensure that you find the right balance between a strategy and interior design and aesthetic?
Oh, well, great question. Thank you. How do I ensure it? I don't ensure, well, I guess I would have to say, yes, I ensure it. What I ensure is that we are mindful and purposeful, and we try to search for a deeper understanding in a more strategic approach, but you're constantly discovering. So you never have the full reassurance that you have reached it, but at least it's like asking someone, how can you design a classic? You know, how can you ensure that the car you are designing right now is going to be a classic in 40 years? How do you know that it's going to be like a Porsche 911 that from 60 years ago that everyone goes like, whoa. When they were designing the Cartier Tank watch, did they know that they were designing a classic? No, but there are certain traits. You have to be disruptive at that moment. You have to challenge the status quo, but you also have to find deep meaning in what you're doing and answering some additional problems that have never been addressed before. And then you have more chances of balancing and being really strategic and then designing a classic, which is staying and being relevant with your proposals, which is not easy. And in this world that everyone wants to buy and throw it away and ruin the world through this constant seeking of new things, I think we really need to bring back the sort of meaningful design solutions that are relevant and that stay and stand the test of time.
I mean, I've postponed a trip to Japan 3 times since the pandemic.
Me too.
And I've got it booked again for November, but I am convinced I'm not going to be able to make it until the spring next year. But anyway, what I was going to say is that this is what you find in Japan. I think one of the beauties of Japan is that they take so much care and they have so much respect for things that last. Exactly. And things that, and when you look at stuff that are classic in Japan, they're not classic in the Western way. They're classic because they've been, there's a lot, you can see the craftsmanship behind,
exactly,
the thoughtfulness behind the design, the care that has been taken to really build it. You find these in 400-year-old pieces as well as very, very recent pieces, because you see some architecture of the wonderful current Japanese architects amongst which IE has the privilege of having...
The paper pavilion. Have you been to Paris recently, Jacob? Because I just came back and I went to see the transformation of the Musée de la Bourse, and it's been done by Tadeo Ando.
Oh, by Tadeo Ando, really?
Yeah, Tadeo. And it's so wonderful. It seems like it has been there forever.
And did you go to La Samaritaine?
No. But I've seen that it has been remodeled. I know. But what I'm saying is exactly this, the attention to detail, the respect for craftsmanship, which is exactly what we're doing in our MSID, in the program that I lead and that you're an important key part of.
Super important.
Take our students to Milano because their hand craftsmanship is so important. So we're going to visit Poltrona Frau. They're the guys leather, you know, they upholster the Ferraris. Hola, like they know. And then Cassina and Capellini, you know, they're really prestigious companies that take such...
Can I join that trip?
Well, if you behave. I'm the director.
An amazing trip. Goodness.
No, it is amazing. And then we have the other one is to Vitra. And we're going to meet Nora Feldbaum, you know, the CEO. And she's going to teach also with Rafael Gilgen. I don't know if you've met him. He's a trend scout for Vitra. And also their attention to detail, their definition of classic. And it's precisely Rolf Feldbaum, the uncle from Nora, who said, what makes a classic a classic? And it's so important. the definition of what makes a classic. What are you trying to show me?
This is a gem, a classic.
No.
This is
a book. You bore me.
This is a book that was designed by Tibor Kalman for Rolf Feldbaum, and it's called Chairman. And the beauty of it is that he designed it for Rolf Feldbaum when Rolf Feldbaum was the chairman of Vitra, but it's also Chairman.
And it's the man that has the obsession for the
And Tibor Kalman was an incredible.
Oh, I'm going to buy it.
That passed away. Amazing. I mean, Vitra is Vitra.
Those two trips are so important. You can come, Jacob, if you have any time.
I will
behave and be intelligent.
I will be intelligent.
As always. So sorry, Tanya.
It's okay. I can imagine
who's going to watch this interview? Potential students?
Potential students.
Well, they're going to get a flavor of how fun the course is going to be.
I know it is. And among the faculty, we get along so well that I want to be a student just to be more with the faculty.
Moving on into a not so different field, let's go with you, Jacob. When it comes to delivering branding projects, what would you say has been the most challenging, or you can tell us the most interesting branding environment that you and your team have created along these years?
Saffron became 20 this year, and I think 2021, although the pandemic hasn't been really helpful to celebrate, hopefully we will after the summer. And in the 20-year history of Saffron, there are some key milestones. Obviously, I mean, and I hate to say it, one, the first milestone with Elvira online, because the first milestone, the client that made us who we are, was a tiny little project that wanted to be an airline and eventually became Vueling. And Vueling was a very, very, and I say this because Elvira's brother was the founder and the CEO of Vueling.
He was 33 then. Hello.
He was 33. Well, you know, he is not like Elvira and I. He's really, really smart. We are normal. Elvira and I are normal.
Okay, remind me to speak later with you.
Anyway, so Vueling was one, and I am the latest is that we've done some quite fascinating exercises lately with Swisscom or with obviously with Facebook, but the really, really challenging one was YouTube. And the reason why YouTube was a really challenging one, because I mean, believe it or not, I'm an engineer by training, and I even if I wasn't convinced, I did a master's degree in engineering. As an engineer, when we were working with at the very beginning with YouTube, the second law of thermodynamics, called the law of entropy, says that chaos is inevitable in an ever expanding universe. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling our client in San Bruno in California that. YouTube was an ever-expanding universe because, you know, people keep uploading and uploading and uploading videos to YouTube. So it's an ever-expanding universe, so that chaos was inevitable. And one of the very first things they wanted us to do is to put some order into the YouTube family. And by any standard, it was the most fascinating exercise at the time in 2016 when we were working with them, because obviously working for YouTube was quite an amazing thing. And we tried, and we couldn't find anything from the conventional brand architecture and brand systems that could help really resolve this idea of chaos, until we went back to our experience in place branding, and we used the metaphor of cities and played with the idea that YouTube is a destination. It's a destination where different communities go. There's people that go like us, go to watch a video on a particular movie, on a particular speech. But there's also people that are really part of heavy metal music or watching game doing game video games, or the most obscure of the things is people, there's communities around like quantum physics, or like, you know, there's people that really go into those places. And so we ideated a system that originated in the plan of a city. And urbanism helped us, or urban planning helped us really come up with a system that would give order to the chaos that YouTube was. Mm. And once we were involved into all this, YouTube decided, YouTube, which is obviously a digital only business, decided that they wanted to have a physical manifestation. And the team had quite a challenge to try and find out how can we express in a physical environment something which is digital by design and by definition. And if you go to some places in London or in New York or in LA, you see that there's not only the YouTube studios where people go to record, but there's also shops that sell YouTube memorabilia, etc. And it was really fun to come up with a concept that was a physical, three-dimensional articulation of what a genuinely digital brand was all about. And I think every client has its own peculiarities and every client has its own challenges, but I think YouTube has been by far the most challenging.
Sounds great. I'm going to look it up, that story.
Get it on our website.
Yeah.
It's very impressive, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So would you say, Jacob, there is a difference in the way that one should create internal and external branded environments?
You mean for employees or for customers?
Employees, yeah, and customers.
Yeah, well, I mean, in any circumstance, when one talks about, well, as you know, we define brand as a promise of an experience delivered. And brand, in our view, brand is at the very much at the origin of everything we do. And when you design with the spirit of a brand in your mind, you establish ways by which the values, the personality, the DNA of the organization, of the brand, gets manifested in a 3D environment. When you talk about, obviously, an environment for your employees is not the same as an environment for your customers, because here's when all the less emotional and more rational elements come to place. And an environment for your employees must fulfill the function of being a workplace that transpires the brand, but is a workplace. And an environment for your customers, normally, I imagine, a transactional environment has a very different form or different shape, which is much more of a transactional one. But with the added layer of complexity, if I'm thinking about a bank branch, where you also have to fulfill a number of working requirements. So developing a physical experience for your employees or for your customers, although they both serve, there's a common denominator, and the common denominator has to be the brand and the brand DNA, the articulation or the manifestation, the physical manifestation changes depending on the actual functionalities that you need to introduce in the space. But by any standard, we need to feel comfortable with the fact that a space, the environment, is one of the key manifestations of the brand, and brand has to be felt, breath has to be there. Yeah.
Let me add here, Tanya, because a lot of people think branding is using the logo and the colors. And so it comes like towards the end of a project, and it's not true. The brand is the heart of the culture and what differentiates you from the rest. So you have to take it into account from the beginning, but it's an experience. So the culture of a company is what defines it. And you have to live the culture of your brand and your values. No, that's your aspiration. You don't have to see them written in the walls. You don't have to see the colors of the brand everywhere. You have to feel it. You have to see how things are done around here. And that's the culture. And then the whole space talks about that experience and that brand. So just adding.
Yeah, and I think something that has also been accelerating is the digitalization, and it's becoming a key factor in an industry. And we can see that throughout the years, we have seen this increased blurring line between physical and digital worlds. How do you designers ensure that they're creating a holistic brand experience between both of them?
That is one of the most challenging aspects of our project. Usually, web pages are fantastic. And whenever a potential client calls me, and I look up and I research a bit, and I go like, ooh, they're so cool. I'm going to tell a story of a client that was my client a long time ago. So it's long gone and they recognize it. So it's Sony Music. So all of a sudden, Sony Music wants to talk to us and wants to consider whether they should move from their building or not, to which kind of site, smaller, larger, more hip, less. What is the area? How should we look? So I look in the web page. So the digital world is always like paradise. Everyone is so cool. And then I walked into the office and I was like, what is this? And the president knows because I told him, gosh, had I not seen all the logos of Sony Music and the photographs of Michael Jackson and all these, I would have thought I'm in the office of, a bureaucrat for the city.
An auditor.
Yeah, no, un registrador de la. Yeah. So I was, it's so boring. And you're in closed office. It's such a grandeur. Why do you want grandeur? Oh, no, but here I have all the photographs with all the singers. Yeah. Okay. So take it away and start thinking how you look like. So then we took them through a very interesting journey, looking for areas in the city and how much smaller. They went from occupying almost, and they were the owners, and they had that option to sell, and that's why they sold it. They had a building that was almost 6,000 square meters, and they were slightly over 100 people. And with all the challenges of the pirates selling pirate CDs and the Spotify's appearing, everything, and it was like, everyone is against us. Then we found a small place, 1,300 square meters. We fitted them in. Each change of occupation of the space really open to all singers, artists, because that is the heart of their business, not the CD, it's the artist. And that's what had to change. And so in music, that is the heart of the business. So this has to be the house of music and artists. And now they go, that was done in 2012 or 13. They overcame that terrible time and they're quite hip, and the office is still working. We're now doing a few adjustments to have more people use the space. So that was a very nice thing in aligning what they said and how they, this sign that Jacob is saying, how you present yourself.
Exactly, yeah.
It's quite easy. When you go physically, you go in, most people do not analyze why they see something and they don't understand it. It's because it's not aligned with your expectations. So they have presented themselves somehow, and then you go in and it looks completely different. You have to take care of that. And then the second point, sorry, and I'll be done. The hybrid world, that the pandemic has pushed us into, because we were all face-to-face and then we went all remote. And now we are going to have to find this place in the middle that is called hybrid, is a challenge for everyone. So all meetings that are hybrid are difficult. At IE, we are teaching liquid sessions, which means students can join online or physically, but it's, we really need to change our culture and our methods. We need to teach differently. We need to interact differently. We need to be aware of the people who are not physically with us. So it's a challenge, but that's what makes us grow. You wanted to say, Jacob, sorry.
It was all going to become too boring.
Already boring. Yeah,
definitely. And living through disrupting times like this one, regardless of the...
the suffering.
the stupidity that we have in our leaders, politicians, no matter where we live. I think
everywhere, my dear.
This is what I mean. This is what I mean. No matter where we live, anywhere we have a stupid as a ruler. I think it's a fantastic time to live. And people like Tania and the younger generation, not maybe us as well. You know, it's. I think it's great because at the end of the day, experience is going to be the name of the game. And an experience has to be a seamless manifestation, digital and physical, of what you stand for as a brand. And what was and being part of what's happening at the moment, I think it's a fantastic opportunity. Yes. That those that will join our master's program will be uniquely prepared to really get a good
exactly.
Because I think it's not like what it was 5-10 years ago. I think it's going to be quite a pretty amazing moment to go through. And actually, bring from the knowledge. I'm not talking about myself, but many of the teachers or the professors that you've lined up, I think, can share an incredible amount of wisdom with the students, and I think it's going to be quite something this coming year.
I completely agree with you, and also that it's a great time, and I have to say I'm so proud that we are ahead of the curve. So there aren't places like ours, there are no programs like ours teaching strategic design, not only technicalities, not only aesthetic solutions and functionality, but also the broader mind and the challenging of young minds and faculty minds. The other day we had an event, I wish you had been there, and everyone participated in a challenge that I posed, and it was really amazing to see the mixture of younger and older people, more experienced and less, trying to solve a not easy challenge. So that is what is interesting in life, to learn. And to, you know, and to be surrounded by people who help you better and improve and test all your skills and talents, try them, which is great. Now a question where we can finalize.
Perfect. Why don't you guys give us a little bit of a sneak preview into what sort of topics you will be covering in the master?
Okay. The topics. So there are three terms. In at the beginning, you're going to learn in the first term the ABC and the 1, 2, 3. You know, you have to learn like that song from the Jackson 5. ABC, as easy as 1, 2, 3. You have to do the basics. I was a dance teacher for very long. You cannot teach anyone to be a great dancer if they haven't had a ballet training, you know, really knowing the positions of the body and the basics. Then you can be a great dancer or a great choreographer. First term, you do the basic. Second term, you do more complex projects and concepts. And the third one, we're going to challenge you to think into anticipating the future, the challenges for the future, and thinking of what's next. And the subjects are, as I said before, from DGW that comes in its first research, then strategy and design. So these are the three key modules that go through all the terms. And then you also have environment, because it's so important from the beginning to acknowledge all the decisions and the impact of your decisions, and technology. So technology as an enabler in the digital world, environment as the main focus for a designer, because we're ruining the world. And some people say it's a problem that we have with waste, but it's also habits. But in the heart of it is a design problem, because we don't design good enough things that stand the test of time. So we're really focused on that. And during the whole term, you're going to be the most important module is learn by doing. So you're going to be doing a project throughout the term where you have to reflect from the five subjects that I've said: research, strategy, design, technology, environment, all what you've learned into that project that you do the first term. the second in the final thesis project.
I think Elvira, if I can say here, I think one of the really, really interesting things about this program is it's in person. It's 100% in person. It's not blended that it used to be before. Call me an old man, but I think the beauty and the value that one gets by really having IRL, I mean, in real life meetings versus virtual meetings is, I mean, enormous. The difference is colossal. I cannot really emphasize the benefit that students will get from having the possibility of really dealing in physical.
Yeah, let me add here one thing, while you're here. I think the greatest thing that we have changed is that before we used to do, if you list all the tasks for a professional life, most of the tasks we performed at the office. And then when the pandemic came, all those tasks we performed at home, but there are two differences in the tasks. Some are planned and many others at the office were unplanned. When you go remotely, you don't have unplanned because you don't bump into other people.
So there's no serendipity.
That's my favorite word that was coming there. So serendipity only happens physically.
Yeah.
In an environment that really generates the good vibes. So that is what we're doing at MSID, generating good vibes and good structure so that serendipity happens, and that has to be face-to-face. And remotely, it's so hard to get to have unplanned meetings. I'm not going to call you, Jacob. I may think of you, but then I will not call you because I need to find in your...
Exactly, absolutely.
...some time. I will someday.
Thank you both. It was great to hear your opinion on branded environments. If you want to learn more about the subject and take your career to the next level, find out more about the EM Master in Strategic Interior Design on the website. The link is in the show notes below. Thank you so much.
It's been, as always, been wonderful to spend some time.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Disruptive Branding. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe and do leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It helps other brand lovers to find us.